Hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, November 3rd, 2008, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
You must be Stanley. I'm Blanche.
No, Blanche, I'm not Stanley. But I am your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I have a delicious show in store for you. Today, we return to my new series of interviews with noted erotic artists called The Erotic Mind. As you know, we've been chatting with these ingenious people in the hopes of uncovering something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. I've decided to turn to Samantha and Jordan over at Oysters and Chocolate Erotic for a hot tip on whose mind I should investigate this week. After all, they were so spot on with their prompting to have KJB inaugurate our series. Dr. Dick, we have just the guy for you, they said oh so sweetly. We know you and your audience will love him as much as we and our readers do. My go-to gals for all things erotic were absolutely right, as usual. Sex fans, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to the world-class artist who creates his erotic art using the medium of words, Jeremy Edwards. Jeremy's work is featured in 28 hard copy publications, as well as numerous web publications. And, as a special treat, he will share with us some of the most delectable fruit of his erotic mind.
Hey, you mind if I make myself comfortable? My shirt is sticking.
Please, please do.
Be comfortable. That's my motto, up where I come from.
It's mine, too. It's hard to stay looking fresh in hot weather. Well, I haven't washed or even powdered. Here you are.
Oh, my God. I can see where this is leading. Today's podcast is appropriately brought to you by one of my all-time favorite sponsors, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish gear right there at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab. You know, you'll enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun and, I might add, easy. Yes siree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty sex toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Jeremy, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm totally stoked that we finally made this opportunity to be together. I'm honored to be in such smutty company. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, nice people. Hey, they do look nice, don't they?
They are.
Hello, Dr. Dick. You're a nice person, too, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Well, let's save the you're a nice person, Dr. Dick, until this is over. You might think differently by the end.
Yeah, you may have to remind me at that point.
Great. You know, ever since Samantha and Jordan over at Oysters and Chocolate told me what hot shit you are, I couldn't wait for this opportunity to pick your erotic mind, as it were. Again, my hat is off to Sam and Jordan for their fine connection. By the way, how long have you been involved with those fine ladies?
They published me first in March of 2006.
Wow.
So that's a long time in erotic years.
And cyber years, too.
Yeah.
Because that's like fucking forever, basically.
That's what I'm trying to do, yeah.
Listen, I want to make sure that you know that you're welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment. Talking about the erotic mind is a swell thing and all, but savoring the fruit of that mind's labor is even better, if you ask me.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. So let's begin at the beginning. Jeremy Edwards is your nom de plume, or nom de erotica, or nom de smut, as the case may be. Can you tell us why you decided on a pseudonym? Are you really the Prime Minister of Canada, sir?
Not last time I checked, although you know, I don't keep up with Canadian politics as much as I should. But seriously, you know, in a saner world, there would not be any kind of stigma attached to doing something like writing erotica. But in this world, you know, I'm conscious of the fact that there are people out there who might make trouble for somebody who was publicly known as an erotica writer. Yeah. And I know that some writers just take their chances with that, and it depends on their circumstances, of course. Right. And I admire that. Personally, I've been taking the safer route. And, you know, beyond that, sexuality is such a touchy or awkward subject for so many people, and as you well know, it shouldn't be. But even a lot of people who are open-minded and liberated are awkward around it, and for that reason, I prefer to remain in control of which people in my world I have those conversations with about what I'm doing, writing erotica, and I'm totally proud of what I do, but it's just that I don't want other people's hang-ups to kind of clutter up my interactions.
You know, I totally agree. You know, like I'm like way out there in terms of sexuality and have been for pretty much all my adult life. And I can tell you the slings and arrows of even people who I would think that would be my natural allies are just really unfortunate. So the path of discretion is probably a good thing.
And you can always undo that more easily than you can change your mind if you've been open in the first place.
Yes, exactly. So how did you come upon Jeremy Edwards?
Well,
a lovely name.
Well, thank you. I just thought it suited me. Now, I should mention that when I first began using it, there was not yet a British television star by the name Jeremy Edwards.
Ah.
But, you know, these celebrities pop up. What are you going to do?
That's
can't
right.
control
you can...
them.
Especially those English type. Oy, oy, oy.
Okay, you know. Yeah, here you are. You're over here in America with your back to the Atlantic. You turn around, and there's a celebrity using your name.
I know. I think it's wrong,
really
basically. I noticed that you are a Gemini, and that probably helps with the dual personality thing, right?
One of my personalities is Gemini, yes.
I, sadly, am a Virgo, and so I simply couldn't pull that off. There's absolutely no difference between Richard Wagner and Dr. Dick. I mean, how boring is that?
Well, in truth, that's really how it is for me, and I'll talk a little more about that if we talk more about
sure.
That whole process of going back and forth between the primary person, let's call it, and the pseudonymous person.
Right. That was a nice word, pseudonymous.
Well, thank you.
Use that. Do many people in your life know your alternate life as Jeremy Edwards?
A few do.
Uh-huh. How do you discern if a person in your real life is worthy of this information?
Well, it's really on a case-by-case basis. You know, these would all be people that I know well, and I kind of make my best guess if somebody, if I know somebody, I think is likely to think it's cool, to be supportive of it, to be interested in it in a positive and non-judgmental way, then I'm likely to take that step and offer it. And there are two different steps that I can take, and the first step is to tell somebody that I do write erotica under a pen name, and that I'm getting published a lot, and it's great, and I, you know, having a great time. And then if somebody's really interested, I can actually show them the work, you know, tell them what the pen name is, and just kind of open that whole door.
Right.
And depending how they respond to the first step, that would either encourage or discourage me from taking it, you know, to the next step.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because, you know, when people ask me what I do, I always start out with, "Do you like gladiator movies?" I'm just kidding. Well, we'll get more to what's behind the pseudonym in a bit, but right now I want to share with our audience your accomplishments as an author. And
wait to hear.
Your work has been featured in 28 hard copy publications, if I'm understanding that correctly, as well as numerous web publications. That's quite a success, would you not say?
I'm very happy.
Uh-huh. When do you find time to touch yourself impurely, my friend?
Oh, well, that's part of the job.
So are you a one-hand typist or what?
Well, I've got a very dexterous nose. And that's also helped me out in many areas of my life.
And there's a story in that I sense. A hot erotic story.
I smell a story.
That's wonderful. What's the most recent publication of yours?
Well, there are a couple of anthologies that are coming out right about now, this minute. One is called Frenzy, and that's a collection of super short erotic pieces edited by Allison Tyler for Clayus Press. The other one is called Seriously Sexy Volume 3. Mm-hmm. And that's edited by Miranda Forbes for Excite Books. And I've had the honor of appearing in many books from each of these terrific editors, so I'm really thrilled about that.
Great. Do you have a favorite?
Well, it would be tough to answer favorite without, playing favorites. I won't. I love them all.
It's like children. Your children.
These are my children.
Well,
and the editors are the godparents.
Exactly that. Instead of asking you to choose a favorite, could you choose a snippet to share with us?
Yes, I have right in front of me, as it so happens, the piece that is running in Frenzy.
Uh-huh.
And again, this book is all short pieces, so this is a short piece which I can read in its entirety.
Oh, excellent.
This is called You in Your Apricot Panties.
Woof.
And here we go. Oh my fucking goodness. You! You in your apricot panties. Sitting there, cross-legged on the rug, your music magazine spread in front of you as if it were a horny girl with her legs open, just for you. You in your apricot panties. You in your panties, your sun-bleached hair perennially falling in your face, your wholesome little breasts enjoying their bra-optional freedom. You in only your panties, your apricot panties. Your apricot panties with slits at the hips that give me a window on the sleek, fleshy world of your just-below-the-waist contours. Your apricot panties, whose opaqueness around your crotch provides a modesty that is so sensually undermined by the wisps of blonde bush that peek out along the seams. Your apricot panties, whose sunny color may say bathing suit, but whose cotton intimate gusset shouts private whenever your moisture begins to seep through. Something in the magazine makes you laugh. But when your eyes meet mine to share the joke, I know that your mind isn't really on music biz gossip. You look hungry for me, you in your apricot panties. On the days that I fold our laundry, your apricot panties look so cute in the basket, smiling up at me in their sleep. But cute doesn't cover how sexually dynamic they look on your body. When they're wrapped around your ass, it's impossible for me to separate the wrapping from the package. I'm not seeing apricot panties. I'm not seeing you. I'm seeing you in your panties. Your panties on you. Your panties on you like a neon apricot sign directing me to your cunt. Your panties on you like fluorescent orange highlighting across the word sex on a page full of other words. I don't just want to run my hands over your cheeks and give wet kisses to your pussy. No, what I want is to fondle your derriere in your apricot panties, to mouth your crotch with the fabric between us. To taste cotton that tastes like your pussy, to rub my lips against natural fibers that house your natural fibers. Your ass is so round beneath them. Hell, even the reinforced seams have a rounded edge to them, as if the manufacturer wanted every detail of this garment to scream femininity. Did the manufacturer know how mouth-wateringly luscious your soft bottom would look in them? Did he hold the fabric up to the window of his office and ponder how the rich cotton would stretch across the perfect shape of your pale behind? Did he lock his office door to pour over full-color schematic drawings that demonstrated how tightly the orange skin would cloak the corner where mound turned south toward cunt? I want those drawings. But mostly right now, what I want is to kiss you all along the edges of your apricot panties, following the bikini-cut boundary across your sensuous belly, around to that ticklish spot in the small of your back, and downward, ever downward, taking care to kiss each millimeter of the hidden place where the gusset clings against the very upper insides of your thighs, where the flesh is so close to your sex that it tastes like the treasure that the apricot panties proudly enclose. You can make me hard merely by mentioning them. tell me when we're walking down the street in our winter coats that your irritating coworker got your panties in a bunch, and my dick will stiffen while my voice empathizes. Mention casually that you need to plan a shopping trip because you need more socks and panties, and I'm ready to fuck you standing up in the department store dressing room of your choice. Not all your panties are apricot panties, but it is always the apricot panties that I visualize when you say panties. Those are the panties that matter. The panties I'll welcome any passing excuse to imagine touching, smelling, and tasting with you in them. If I were bolder, I might lean into you at random moments, in restaurants, on airplanes, in subway cars, and ask you to say, my panties, so that I could salivate apricot-flavored kisses into your mouth and nurse honeyed pre-cum against my fly while wrapping my mind around your ass in apricot panties. I want to hear you say that phrase to acknowledge that the panties I adore on you are practically a part of you. They are your panties, the panties that enclose your unique feminine essence. You and I are not materialistic, but how I love to hear you affirm ownership of that most personal property. Will you say it now? Will you have occasion as you sit there with your magazine to toss off some sentence that includes the magic phrase, my panties? I have noticed that they launder very nicely, these quality apricot panties. No matter how juicy I make you in them, they come back fresh for more. On more than one occasion, I've creamed right across the front of them when you've aroused me so extremely that my animal jets of love sought the comfort not just of your sex, but of your sex in apricot panties. I can't see the panties when I press my tingling erection between your pelvis and mine, my hardness grinding against you through apricot cotton, but I know they're on you, receiving my love with you. And you never regret it. You know that if I'm excited enough to come onto your panties, that I'm good for more, and that you'll get yours. Now, one more paragraph here. Now you abandon the magazine and stand up. You adjust the crotch of your apricot panties, or have I glimpsed an instant of anticipatory masturbation? You close the distance. You stroke my chest and push me backward toward the bed. You playfully grab the front of my shorts and kiss me. You press against me, press them against me, press yourself against me through them. You giggle, squirming and teasing, because you know in a second I'll be all over you. You in your apricot panties.
Yikes. That's amazing.
Got a little interested in those panties there.
One would say fixation. Do you know how to say fixation, sir?
I didn't even know it was broken.
I love it. I was trying to write down as you were talking this one line you said, animal jets of love. Was it animal jets
it's
of love?
Animal, find it. Yeah, animal jets of love. Yeah.
That is hot. That's hot.
Thank you.
That's hot. I was also jotting down other words. Obviously, the color, apricot, breasts and bush and moisture, all basically usual words. We have a president with one of those words named.
I try not to think of that.
Yeah, I completely divorced
it entirely.
So it's stringing those words together in a context that apparently makes the ho-hum erotic. Would you not say?
Well, I take your point, yes, because, of course, you know, the dictionary, a good dictionary, is full of all those words, but it's the order you put them in, the rhythm and the timing and the pattern.
So most of the erotica that I've read is exceptionally brief, yet very powerful. Just like that complete story that you read in a matter of a minute or two, and because of its brevity, every word must count. How do you build that tension, so to speak, in such a petite work of art?
Well, you know, I love writing stories that are brief. Now, they're not all as brief as that. But they're all short stories. And, you know, I guess you could say that I'm sort of a less is more kind of writer in some respects. In other words, I paint with a light hand, and I try to evoke character and mood with a relatively small number of select details.
Uh-huh.
And rhythm is very important to me. And I think rhythm is closely related to what you're talking about in terms of the building of tension.
Uh-huh.
So when I'm working, for example, on finalizing a story that I've drafted, I can sort of feel the underlying rhythm, if you will. And I try to make sure the pacing is right and the tension develops in such a manner as to culminate when it should. So sometimes I might need to hasten a transition or stretch the action out in uh-huh. order to serve that purpose. I think in a longer work, there have to be more peaks and valleys, so you build and release tension several times. Here, it's a little more straightforward, I think, because you're expecting it to be read in one sitting.
But at the same time, I mean, one gets a very clear picture of what is going on. I mean, despite the spare use of words, we know that your muse is blonde, and that the rug matches the drapes. She's got perky breasts. She's reading a magazine. So it's very curious. It's absolutely wonderful. I mean, I wonder how long it would take an average person like myself to to make those same kind of connections in words that you do so beautifully and sparingly.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Do you ever look at over a draft of a story and say, I really need to make that dirtier or maybe less smutty?
The former, yes. My stories are certainly explicit, but I think I sometimes emphasize flirtation and foreplay uh-huh. and other elements of the build-up, so to speak, more than some erotica writers do. And so consequently, I'll occasionally finish a draft, and I'll find that the climactic sex scene is a little slim by comparison with what uh-huh. precedes it. And so then I'll go back and develop that big sex scene further because I want to make sure that the reader and the characters get all the satisfaction that I owe them.
So are you suggesting then good erotica, or at least the erotica that you write, which I think is good erotica, needs to actually have a sex scene as opposed to just build up of things?
You know, not necessarily. I would say usually it does, but there are some amazing pieces where the protagonists never have sex.
Uh-huh.
One of the things I love about this field is that writers do so many creative things and can convey an erotic mood or feeling with so many different techniques. So you can have a story where the characters don't have sex. There can be masturbation. There can just be a series of thoughts in a protagonist's mind. It can be something that's just suggested, but it is done so in such a sensuous, erotic way that it's clearly erotica. However, if you analyze what's actually happening in the story, there's not actually anything overtly sexual. It's sensual, it's sensory, and it's clearly tied into sexuality.
That's brilliant. You know, one other thing that came to mind as I was listening to you read your story is that maybe like 2/3 of the way through, it could have been a woman talking to another woman. And it wasn't until you, about 2/3 of the way in, said the word, what it's hard on or boner or hardness or something like that, that I thought that it was so curious, because I was thinking, I mean, is he actually going to be writing female to female?
And I have done that.
Isn't that interesting? And I assume that you don't have a pussy yourself. So I mean, how do you?
not Prime Minister of Canada and no vagina. Last time checked.
No kidding. So how do you get in? How do you get into character like that?
Well, I'm very interested in female sexuality. It's what turns me on.
Uh-huh.
So of course that informs my heterosexual stories where I'm writing from a male point of view,
uh-huh.
but I also like to sometimes put myself in the woman's position, so to speak,
uh-huh.
as a writer, and because it's exciting to me to explore that, and I also sometimes write lesbian stories,
wow.
and basically from every angle, uh-huh. I'm very happy to look at the sexuality of women.
Wow. And it's really female-oriented sexuality that you write, as opposed to male-oriented. I mean, I would imagine that there are some writers of erotica, males, who write strictly from a male point of view and, you know, the powerful dick and, you know, pouncing on and having his way with and all of that kind of stuff. Yours, at least from that story, is a real idolization of female sexuality.
Yeah, that's what I'm about. I mean, I'm the sensitive male. I'm the guy who just reveres female beauty and female sexuality and who responds to the intelligent woman, the witty woman, the woman's personality, the woman's shimmering light that shines forth from her, you know, and so that's where I'm coming from. And that, I think, allows me either to write from the point of view of a man who's feeling those things, or to perhaps pay homage to that from the inside, trying to sort of get inside the head of a female character and explore what it means to feel sexual and sensual as a woman.
I think that's brilliant. I honestly do. My hat is off to you, because that's not something that I could do. I have great admiration for women and female sexuality, but I wouldn't know where to begin. Is writing for a female audience different than writing for a male audience? And do you write for a male audience?
Well, personally, I don't really think in quite those terms.
Okay, good.
And that might be partly because, even though I'm a heterosexual man, my own stylistic preferences might match up more with what is sometimes thought to be characteristic of what women as a group are more likely
right.
to be looking for. But what I do is pay close attention to how editors describe what they're looking for.
I see.
And how they demonstrate what they're looking for by, you know, looking at what they've published by other people.
Uh-huh.
And I've written for a number and continue to write for a number of editors who explicitly state that they're publishing primarily for a female audience.
Uh-huh.
And so I feel, as a writer, it's important to identify what these editors mean by that. And what it usually translates into, in my experience, is an emphasis on character, sensuality, wit, dignity, sex positivity,
great,
and of course sensitivity to the sexual needs of women and not only of men. And these are all the things I want to do anyway.
Uh-huh.
So that works out great for me. I mean, in my personal opinion, and this is just an opinion, is that most of those elements describe high-quality erotica in general, whether or not it's positioned as being marketed specifically to women. But by the same token, you know, let's face it, this is a world where culture continues to be male-dominated, by and large, where women's sexuality has been ignored, misunderstood, demonized, repressed, and continues to be.
Yes.
So I can certainly understand the branding of a line of erotica as being especially for women, because there are probably a lot of women out there whose only exposure to erotica or porn, if you will, has been in the form of material that, shall we say, is not particularly sensitive or artistic.
Yes, male-dominated or male-directed.
Right, or they may think of it that way, even if it isn't always true. They may think of that as being, you know, for men, and they may be looking for somebody to offer them something that they know has been designed more with their own types of sensibilities in mind. And so I can see why editors and publishers would do that. And I have to say, speaking as a male author, I'm very proud to have my work welcomed by editors who are looking to please female readers.
I would think so too. I would think so too. Let's see. What did I want to say? Something about if a man was writing for a male audience, and this is what I was trying to say just a little while ago. I mean, he would probably put his emphasis on him, on the male character, you know, on his sexual prowess and, you know, the size of his dick and, you know, the power that he wields and, you know, his cocksmanship and whatnot, as opposed to what you portray, at least in the story that you just read, and that is, you know, that really the center of the entire thing is a woman and her sexuality and your sexuality as is in homage to hers.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, the men in my stories, you know, they do experience erections, and they have orgasms, and sometimes they masturbate, and so their own sexual pleasure and sexual feelings are are certainly described, at least in some stories. But it's like you're looking out from that at the woman, and so most of the time the focus is on the woman, I would say.
Yeah, interesting, because again, I hope I'm not belaboring this point too much, but you go to great lengths describing and talking about the intimacies of female genitalia, and hardly at all do you know, only in casual reference to the male genitalia. You know, I mean, you don't go out of your way to say, you know, it's big, it's hard, it's pumping, it's, you know, it's uncut, and it blah, 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 where lots and lots of people could easily go in that direction. So I just think that's an amazing thing. So good for you.
Oh, well, thank you. Now, would this perhaps be a good moment to read a little more?
Yeah, be great.
And since we've been talking about the sexuality of women, I thought I would read a couple of short excerpts from a lesbian erotica piece that I wrote, which ran at Oysters and Chocolate.
Ah.
Yay, Oysters and Chocolate. And this is called Symmetry. And I'm going to jump in somewhere in the middle, and then I'm going to jump out and jump back in. So here we go. Carla would never forget the first time Susan stripped for her. Poised daintily in her bedroom, with a smile that said, "I'm shy," but a glimmer and resolve in her eye that said, "I'm going to eat and drink you up, honey, then eat and drink you up again for dessert." That look had made Carla so wet, and she had stood there for a sacred moment, her pulse frozen and her panties clinging. And in that moment, she had found that one thought in particular stood out from all the giddiness, marvel, and lust. She looks like me. Before, this had been something to take for granted, but here it had emerged as the most arousing revelation she'd ever had. "Is that what my pussy looks like when it's wet?" Carla would often think as she held Susan's tender lips apart before tasting her. After 15 years, the thought still did it for her. Sometimes she would stop to rub Susan's blonde bush, then her own blonde bush, alternating the soft strokes with perfect equity. One for me, one for you. Until Susan, gliding on giggles, would clutch gently at Carla's furry mound and elicit a parallel river of laughter. Carla would sneak a look at the mirror on the wall and see two 41-year-old beauties with their hands between each other's legs. She would observe Susan's bottom wiggling with titillated abandon and her own face flushing with pleasure. Sometimes, when they were sufficiently entangled, she couldn't tell whose legs were whose. At those moments, they had a collective resemblance to some many-limbed goddess, transported by secret joys. And jumping ahead here, how well they complemented each other. How well indeed. In the bedroom, Carla, who couldn't care less about having her nipples licked, could make Susan come by licking hers. The alien nature of Susan's pleasure in Carla's eyes made it especially exciting to deliver, even to anticipate. "I am in love with a woman who is creaming to have her nipples licked tonight." In the very midst of gratifying that desire, Carla would reflect on it, and she would feel her arousal grow with the tangible awareness of Susan's distinctness from her. The ecstasy of bringing Susan to ecstasy was itself sometimes more pleasure than Carla knew what to do with, and she would simply come in her panties, slickly and helplessly, before Susan could even touch her. But Susan would touch her, and Carla had taught her where to do so. The place was just barely south of her clit, not part of the clit, but an infinitesimal distance away, a signature locus along her inner lips, a unique receptor for an impossibly cozy type of bliss, like mulled wine and warm bathwater and slow-motion orgasms that was not quite comparable to any of the rich sensations that emanated from her tingling bud or her pulsing cunt walls. Carla may have been the only woman in the world with a special nerve ending exactly there. She cherished it, and Susan could sensually pamper her merely by breathing on it a while. In fact, she was expected to, night after night. "Vive la différence," Carla liked to say with a passionate irony to her same-sex near twin when Susan put her over the edge. The French words came out in a guttural slur as Carla's cunt trembled around fingers that looked very much like her own, but moved so differently. And there
Holy
we are.
Cow. Holy cow. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, we have to end it there. Maybe we ought to just take a little breather, you know, all of us in the audience, and go contemplate that. Anyhow, I have so much more that I would like to talk to you about. Can I invite you back for next week?
It just so happens I'm available.
Get out. Alrighty then. Good. So we'll be looking forward to hearing more from you and about you next week. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Wow, what a great show, huh? Tune in next week for part two of my interview with Jeremy Edwards and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. I trust y'all been keeping up with the swell product reviews that the Dr. Dick review crew and I have been doing, right? If not, look for the product reviews tab at the top of drdicksexadvice.com for our weekly updates. You'll notice immediately that most all of the products we review are available in my stockroom. It's my go-to place for the best in adult products. Be sure to check it out. And don't forget to look for Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, and don't forget to subscribe. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? That's even better. Over and out.